Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mlio Gabaza, and for today, we are going to be, talking to, a veteran in the broadcast industry in South Africa, that is Nolo Letele. He is a former chairman of MultiChoice, as well as a former CEO of MultiChoice. He was been with the group for quite some time. I think I saw one number that's I saw two numbers. I saw a 25 and I saw a 29. I'm not sure which one of the two is correct. He's going to be giving us some insight there. There is, a film that will be released soon, just about, his life and his journey. But we thought that we would sit and, talk to him today. Interestingly, we talked to him on the day that MultiChoice has released its full year earnings to March 2024. But we just going to be chatting about his journey and maybe some of the insights that he's been able to garner over the years. Nolo, greetings to you today.
Greetings.
Maybe where we can begin. Obviously, we just said that you are a former CEO and a former chairman of MultiChoice. You heard the two numbers that I said. I said 25 and 29. Which one is it?
None are correct. It's 30 years.
Oh, wow.
Been with the company. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just going to take it that at least the 29 was closer to, to the correct answer. Usually when it comes to these types of conversations, it helps to go, from the back in the day and then move your way forward. But I was hoping that maybe we could start in the present, right? What do you make of being, let's say, MultiChoice's, I'm going to start with chair, being chair of MultiChoice during your time versus today? Because today, obviously, there's a lot of excitement around a possible Canal Plus, deal, merger, all of that stuff. And that's something that management has obviously been running with for some time. But what do you make of that, because that is a stage that MultiChoice is about to get into versus your time where you guys were growing, Mnet, MultiChoice, and trying to conquer Africa and all of that.
Look, I suppose during my time as chairman, it was interesting because the bulk of the work that I did was entirely regulatory. It was all regulatory, because we had to deal with a number of things. For instance, the digitalization of South Africa. And I think we played a huge role in providing the input, to the regulators. And in a sense, through DSTV, we have achieved digitalization of South Africa. So that's just one of the things that we had to be faced with. But running a company as a chairman, you are the face of the company, really. And I wasn't involved ongoing basis. I was executive chairman, yes. Most of the work was regulatory, but I had to also foresee or oversee certain technological trends, like new decoders as they came on the market that were developed by us, and also new programming. So, it's been an interesting time.
From a challenge point of view, because obviously there's a distinction between being chairman and being CEO, right? What do you find more challenging? Because obviously when you're CEO, your day-to-day, you are there. Whereas chairman, as you said, there's the regulatory piece and all that. But for yourself, what did you relish more, being chair or being CEO?
I think being CEO is a lot more fun because you're dealing directly with people, your staff, and you are supervising, you know, various projects as they get, you know, they get to fruition. That for me it was the most fun. As chairman, as I said, you're dealing with forces from outside that can make or break your business. And these forces are regulatory most of the time. And so you spend a lot of time going and, you know, going to Parliament, going to Luthuli House, going to speak to the minister or ministers, going to speak to ICASA. All the time you're spending doing that kind of work as chairman. Yeah, because we're always seen as a resource, you know, because of our knowledge in the space. And we contributed a lot, you know, to those regulatory bodies. To, you know, to assist to move the needle along, you know, yeah. And we were looked on to participate whenever there was any conference or an issue, we're looked on, yeah. But I have to say, one had a very strong team working in the regulatory environment, yeah.
You know, that aspect about having a team, right, it's very important because, you know, you have that common adage that they say, you know, you can go, you know, you can go far by yourself, but much further when you're going with others. And it points to, it points to an issue of leadership as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Please, could you maybe talk to us about maybe during maybe your days, maybe we can start, you know, at the time when you became CEO of MultiChoice, right? Because it's just a couple of years after independence. The idea of a black CEO, especially for a large company like a MultiChoice, we're still, you know, working our way, you know, through, you know, some of those things. Who are you looking up to, you know, during some of those years, during some of those times? Because now it's easy for us now in 2024 to look at, yeah, people like yourselves that have gone before. But at that time, you know, who are you, you know, maybe modeling yourself after or taking inspiration from?
Look, Kurt Becker is one person who has had a lot of influence, you know, over me. And there's a couple of other people. Mr. Ndobe, it's from Lesotho, was one person at a younger age who helped build me up. But in the workspace, people like Koba Stoffberg, Jim Fogwin, yeah, these are people that did a lot to, I'd say, in a sense, they mentored me. Yeah, and that I think is what has helped to bring me up to what I became as a CEO. I think that's really how I would respond to that. Yeah,
and how would you describe, I guess, the leadership? The leader that you ended up being versus the leader that you began, began as?
Look, I think I was well on my way.
yeah.
I was well on my way because my people skills had been, you know, very advanced, if I say so myself. what helped me, I mentioned the people that influenced me, and I also took up a sort of, call it a mentoring appointment, somebody that was along the way, I think it must have lasted about a year, along the way was helping to advise me, you know. Fine, we paid the person, but that, I think, brought me to where I needed to be. And I'm the kind of leader that then became very collaborative. In other words, I'm not your Bible puncher, you know, like some people are. And I'm not autocratic, where, you know, some people are like that and it works for them. I tend to be more collaborative, and that has worked well for me. Yeah.
Okay. That's actually an interesting one, I guess, the collaborative approach, and also just understanding the fact that along the way there was possibly help, you know, from a number of different parties. When you mention someone like Kosbeka, that's someone who, at least from my knowledge of him, was technically inclined, liked technology, and, you know, kept up with those types of trends. From what I have gathered, you know, from your point of view, you were coming from a broadcast, you know, point of view. How important was the technology piece? You know, are you a person was technically inclined, or were you just more, you know, just interested in the art around broadcasting?
No, I'm an electronic engineer. That was studies, my qualification. So I was very, very, very into technology. What really attracted me to MultiChoice especially was the innovation that was going on in the technical field. If you look at, just look at the decoder, you know, from when we started as MNET to the decoder today. And each time we have a new version of a decoder, we transmit to satellite. So it's all been very much about technology. In fact, I don't think we'd have a business without being at the forefront of technology. But the important thing is that it was all made here. You know, we had a very good team of engineers, and we still do.
Yeah, because one of the things I was also a bit curious about, obviously, you've got the qualification as an electrical engineer, was were you able during your time at MultiChoice to flex some of that technical ability, or was it more the strategy and the you know, business side of things for yourself? Yeah.
Look, it was really for me more the business side of things, the strategy side. I was far more interested in what the technology could deliver. So that's really where I focused myself, simply because I didn't start or come in as someone who had to walk up there and fix transmitters or fix decoders, and that was not my job. The team was very good that was running with that.
One of the things, and I'm just sticking, you know, on your on the technical piece just for one more moment, is when you look across different businesses and also globally, engineers do well in the world of business. I've noticed that in the United States, for example, you tend to have a lot of people that qualify as engineers but end up in investment banking and that type of thing. What is it that you guys are taught as engineers? Is it in the water? Is it in
the I like to think that engineers tend to think in a more logical fashion. But I think the reality is probably somewhere different, because other than engineers, accountants do well as well. And often you see them running companies, but it's because their bent is on the financial side. Engineers, I think they tend to encompass, you know, the whole value chain across the, you know, the board, because it's the technology. There's always technology involved, and now even more so with AI and so on. At the same time, because of their way of thinking, we tend to do, you know, quite well with the financial side of things, which is important for any business. I think then if you have the attributes that you require, I mean, in my case, you know, as a leader, then you can run a company and run it well. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The one thing, I've asked this to a couple of people before, and one of the feedbacks that I got was that engineers and accountants do well as leaders of large organizations, because you're sort of taught to think in systems and how to create systems, how to manage systems, and I guess manage the complexity around.
Yeah, I think you've put it very well. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So now where we are in 2024, we've sort of been hopping, you know, a bit between the present and, you know, your journey along the way. An important question tends to be legacy, right? For yourself, what do you see as having been your legacy? And is that the legacy you are looking to create?
I think the one thing that I'm very proud of is the fact that I have been the bridge, you know, to take multi-choice into so many African countries. I don't know how much you travel across Africa, but you can land in any hotel, you know, 4 or 5 star, and you'll get DSTV content. Certainly you'll get SuperSport. And on top of that, you know, I think some of the things that I have been at the forefront of introducing is Putumanati, you know, which has been an incredible success in South Africa and continues to be a success because of how many shareholders we still have under Putumanati. It started off as 120,000. I think it's between 80 and 90,000 even today. And that was since 2006. So there are so many legacy issues that I can point to. The other one, I think, is I focused on people. And it's something I believe in very strongly. It doesn't matter what company you run. Your people are your biggest asset. And if you know, I can leave that as a message out there, I think people would, they would actually run successful companies. People tend to forget, and they think, we must be making profits, you know. we must push that, you know, technology thing, and then you leave your people behind. That's all.
Yeah, that's true. The people aspect is one of those things that people, you know, often forget, but certainly important to a business. And on the people aspect, you spoke just now about Putumanati. We've actually had engagements with the team. I think that Singular Systems.
Singular Systems.
Who now run what's called the integrated exchange on which Putumanati shares trade and all that.
Yes.
Very fascinating to hear the history of Putuma. And because you're one of the people that was there, One of my biggest curiosities was, when you look at BEE schemes, they always have a, what's the word I'm looking for?
Empowerment.
A vesting period.
Yes. Right. Yes.
This sort of closed loop, it vests and then you go on to the next one.
Yes.
What informed the decision to make Futhumanathi sort of open-ended? Because that's different.
Yeah, it's very different. It's interesting that you're looking at it that way, because that's exactly what is happening. I need to take a step back and say, Futhumanathi was different in that it empowered everybody, from the man in the street, from your gardener, from your maid, bank teller, anyone, anywhere, right? Unlike the schemes at the time, which would empower four people, five people, and you know about those schemes, right? So Futhumanathi was superb in that way. And I need to throw this in also that the company lent you money for everyone who became a shareholder. You paid 10 rand for a share. 40 rand was lent by the company for that share. And over a period of, as it is, because of the performance of the company, I think 2011, that money had been paid back to the company. And from 2011 onwards, then the idea was that as long as the company is doing well, and as long as you don't sell your shares, you'll continue to enjoy, you know, the dividends. And that has been the case. And I think for the last 7 years now, we've been paying the same amount every year. Yeah. Now, I mean, we have to look at how the company is performing. So that's some further food for thought. But we always manage to recover in the second half. So we'll see.
Yeah. No, most certainly, because when you do talk to investors in Futhumanathi, they struggle to think what else is going to give them the yield that Futhumanathi has been able to do. So as we're about to land this conversation, you know, being cognizant of time, the other aspect, you know, that's interesting about, you know, MultiChoice, there are a number of corporates, you know, that have come up over the decades, and especially, you know, during your time, there was a big rush into the continent.
Yeah.
A lot of corporates got their fingers burned, you know, in various parts of the continent, particularly in West Africa. But MultiChoice stuck it through, and you guys are available in 50 countries, you know, like what you were saying. What was the impetus, you know, during that time? Was it a realization that growth is limited in South Africa, or was it just understanding that if you want to compete with a Comcast, a Sky, you sort of have to be pan-African? What were the discussions that were had that led, you know, for you guys to push? I can, you know, speak, you know, to say that I grew up in Zimbabwe, and having DSTV informed a lot of, you know, our consumption of news, soapies, you know, all of that stuff. So I can never take away the impact that, you know, a platform like that, you know, had.
It's interesting because, you know, what took us out there? There's a number of considerations. First of all, we needed to grow our subscriber base. And it makes a huge difference when you purchase, when you buy programming, because you're able to say, we have 20,000 or 20,000.
Yeah.
We have 22 million subscribers across Africa. you are able to secure that content compared to that company that has only 2 million subscribers. And that's how we've been able to secure the excellent sport and the excellent content, right? The second thing is more defensive. You don't want people to, you know, like your competitors, like Canal Plus, for instance, to come and get beachheads set up around your country, if we're just in South Africa, and they'll be covering Zimbabwe, Zambia, Kenya, you know, all across, because then they've become so much bigger and we're just a tiny operator. And that way, they would just swallow you up so quickly. And it's taken this long for us to stand our ground. So I think those are the considerations. But also, don't forget that we are now able to, we've sponsored so much of local content out there that we have Nollywood, you know, the content is now available for you to watch, for me to watch. And it's actually excellent. It's world class. We've helped it to grow to that. It used to be terrible before. The same applies in East Africa. The same applies in, I think there's a channel, Azambezi or something. So I think those would be the main considerations in my view.
It's been a very fascinating strategy to watch. And it's probably, it's especially from a defensive point of view, probably helped to protect the business.
No, it has. It has. Would have been swallowed up long time ago.
So maybe that's where we can end off in this last maybe 1 or 2 minutes. We've given the journey, you've given us some thoughts around the journey of MultiChoice, the technology going into Africa, your leadership style and all that. I'm not going to ask you whether or not the Canal Plus deal is good or bad or anything like that, but rather maybe you could, because you've got the institutional memory, give us, you know, maybe a view of what MultiChoice's relationship with Canal Plus has been over the years.
No, I mean, I cannot, I really can't give you any knowledge that I have, because Canal Plus has always been out there and addressing the French-speaking countries. There's never been any direct collaboration of any kind. And from where I'm sitting, do I think it's a good thing? I don't think so. And that's a personal opinion. I'm not speaking for management here or for the board. But I know I've worked with the French, and their style is so different. I don't think it'll be good for the company, for MultiChoice. But wait and see.
We'll wait and see. So that's been it. We wait and see, like what you said. That's where we end off. It's been a really great discussion just talking to Nolo about the history of MultiChoice and his role in there, a former CEO, a former chairman, giving us, you know, maybe a balance of what it's like being CEO versus being the chairman. One of the key things that he said is that when you're chairman, it's more, you know, regulation and, you know, making sure that you block and attack the external threats. But when you are inside as a CEO, you are able to craft the strategy and execute, and giving us also, you know, the fact that, you know, he's technically inclined as an engineer, and, you know, some of what that has been able to do for him in his journey. And then obviously growth into Africa, subscriber growth, you know, his leadership style. It has really been a great discussion. So thank you so much, Nolo. We really appreciate this.
Thank you so much.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.